Today's Free For All Friday may not mean a lot to you if you are not a parent yet, especially, or if parenthood of small children was in the distant past for you. But you know what? As Adam Sandler says in The Wedding Singer, well, I have a microphone and you don't, so you will listen to every word I have to say. Well, I mean, you won't. You can always turn the episode off. But if you are interested, I bet you clicked play because you may have a fondness for children, at least for your own children, hopefully, and look back on this, especially, or maybe they are grown up and you realize that old adage is true, that the days are long, but the years are short. So I want to talk about that today here on the Council of Trent. Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology. On Friday, we talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today, what I want to talk about are titles in a book series that, to me, they are very accurate in their description of young children. I want to talk about them from ages 1 to 9 years old. That is the part that I am in right now in life. I don't understand what it's like to raise a teenager. I don't want to understand. I'm like, oh goodness. But right now I have my little kiddos, ages 9, 7, and 4. So they're doing quite well. Three boys, always rambunctious around the house. Someone's always shooting jets, Star Wars, lightsabers, swords, monster trucks, dinosaurs, Nerf guns. I love it. Laura loves it too. So caveats here. I don't know how it would apply to girls as much. My boys don't understand girls terribly well because they don't have any, you know, they don't have any sisters, but they're doing the best they can to understand, like, why don't girls like to do dinosaurs and Nerf like we do? Like, okay. Now, a lot of the female friends they come across and they go visit, you know, their male friends who have female sisters do get in on some of the action. So that is nice to see. So the book series is by Louise Bates Ames. They were written back in, I want to say, like the 1980s, but a lot of the research comes from the 1950s. So I'm not vouching for everything that is in these books. I'm not even vouching for the books themselves. It may have some helpful parenting advice for you. What's funny, when you go back in time and look at parenting advice, it is so interesting to see how it changes. Like in the Victorian era, when you're like in the 19th century, it basically, small children are like little adults, and if you spoil them, they are going to be rotten. If a baby cries, ignore them, because you're just going to spoil the little child. It's just sad, some of the things with children. They're basically, you try to treat them like little adults, and so it doesn't quite understand child and cognitive development and things like that. So that's a bit sad. As we get further on, though, we get better insights into that. But I'm not saying that everything's great now. There's a lot of stuff for child development that I think, you know, now we have just the absurd. A lot of absurdities now are just parents will just do whatever their kids want. And you see like 2-year-olds drinking soda and being on iPads. I'm like, that's really messing up their brains. Like, maybe we need to go back to the Victorian era. I don't know. So Louise Bates Ames has this series, and I just want to go through the titles here for you, because I think they're pretty spot on to what kids are like at every age. Okay, so the books are Your 1-Year-Old, Your 2-Year-Old, Your 3-Year-Old, Your 4-Year-Old, and it has just a very short subtitle for the book. So Your 1-Year-Old, Fun-Loving and Fussy. That is a 1-Year-Old, Fun-Loving and Fussy. The description says, the child from 12 to 24 months of age is a joy to have around. Some of the time, that is. This child is growing at an incredible rate, learning to walk, learning to touch, learning to love, learning to say no for the first time. All of this can be quite a handful for the new parent. So, yeah, I remember 1 year, well, we were house sitting once with Matthew. A friend of ours asked us to house sit. They asked us to house sit because they had a swimming pool. And that was at the time when Matthew could not walk. Now, we were safety conscious. We locked the doors. You know, we made sure he wasn't just sitting by the pool by himself. We didn't do that. But this woman wanted us to watch her home. And she felt more comfortable with us watching with Matthew when Matthew was 6 months old, because Matt could move. He hadn't learned to walk or crawl yet. I think it was like 6 months. Maybe it was 4. He was sitting up, I think. We could plop him down. He was sitting up. We could plop him down. He just sat there. He looked around. Maybe he would topple over, but he wasn't going anywhere. And that is a time when it is just luxurious. Plop them down, easy. It's when they start to crawl and move, then they like to just get into trouble. Ages 1 and 2, no sense about them, no sense, no reasoning with them. It's just pure emotion at one another. A lot of the emotions, it's fun. It's just like giggling and laughing. And I still remember with Matt when I would shake his arms really fast and he would have this wonderful like belly giggle from it, how it would make him feel. But then other times it's just, I have no words. There are no words. It's just tears, or you don't tolerate discomfort for long. Hence the fussiness. So fun loving and fussy, your 1-year-old. 2-year-old and 3-year-old, I'm going to kind of tag together here because I think it's a pretty similar stage. Your 2-year-old, terrible or tender. Your 3-year-old, friend or enemy. Who hasn't heard that one before? I know people talk about the terrible twos. I think Louise Bates Ames might have coined the phrase or at least made it popular. I know it goes back to the 1950s, the idea of terrible twos. In our household, though, it was not really, twos were not what is most terrible. What we noticed, and other parents have noticed, not terrible twos, it's threenagers. Threenagers. When they're three, there is just something, they have these horrible tantrums sometimes at the age of three. And my children, they don't all respond the same at each of these ages. They have their very wonderful, distinct temperaments. But I've noticed with other parents as well that the 3-year-old stage, especially, also bleeding into 2 years old. That was actually one of my favorite phases when the kids were little. 2 years old, I liked two because 12 to 24 months, kids are still somewhat fragile. But like when they get to two, you know, 24, 30 months old, you can do a lot of wrestling, fighting, cuddling. More like boisterous cuddling and fun and adventure. More of that comes out. I think that's maybe it is for dad. I mean, moms, obviously, when they're a newborn, moms get that intensive bonding time, right? With the newborn stage, like dad's like, all right, well, I'll be over here if anybody needs me for anything. Like you don't get to have, moms get that intimate bonding time, I feel like, in the first 2 years. Then once they turn two, I feel like dad gets to take over a little bit and can have more of the dad bonding time, the wrestling, the play fighting. And I know some people say like, oh, that's bad for kids, but it's actually very good for their cognitive development to have those kinds of experiences with dad, flipping them over, throwing them around. But at three, I feel like, and it's similar to when you call them threenagers because they act like teenagers. They have these tantrums because they have these emotional needs and desires that they don't have the cognitive capacity to articulate. And so, and their bodies are very new to them also at this stage of what they're able to do versus when they were younger. And it's all just overwhelming to them. And it leads to these sort of tantrums, similar to how teenagers will have very sophisticated cognitive desires and emotions and belief systems, but lack an ability to articulate it well. And of course, with a body completely changing, they aren't used to, can lead to the similar kinds of outbursts. And I think you see something similar with the threenager. He could just be your best friend helping out, or he's just your enemy. And it's also because at two and three, they start moving away, whereas like one and under, it's like they're an appendage to mom. But by two or three, they realize, no, I'm my own person. I want to do my own thing. I don't want to do your thing. I want to do my thing. I'm me. I am my... And it's amazing to see with self-development, eventually when babies go to having consciousness, to having the thought of like, oh, I exist as an independent person. To have looking at recognizing myself in a mirror, for example, that doesn't happen until several months after birth, and then eventually getting to like three and then finally into four, our little 3-year-old finally turned four. I noticed a big difference from 3 to 4, even at his birthday, that it feels like they're now like a little mini person, happy knowing that they are that mini person with their own desires and they can now sort of negotiate. That's what's hard. Two is like terrible or tender. What's terrible about two, there's no negotiation. You can't negotiate with them. It's what they want or the highway. And they yell and they scream. You can't negotiate. By the time they get to four, though, there's some negotiation. Now, it's still law of the land has to be laid down, which is hard with a cute 4-year-old. But you can negotiate. They can at least understand some things and be brought down through a little verbal discourse from whatever thing is really bothering them, unless they're just totally flat out tired and they can't function anymore. So your Ames's next entry in the volume is your 4-year-old, wild and wonderful. Wild and wonderful. I see that with John Paul. He just loves to run around. His favorite game is dragon tag, which is just tag, but he calls it dragon tag as if it's a distinct variant, which I'm okay with. Dad, you want to play dragon tag? I love it. He runs, he says, he ran to the front of the line to grab a donut. I was like, John Paul, or no, Laura said to him, you can't have a donut. He's like, but I want it. Ha ha. It looks at the line and they all just laugh and they let him get away with it. Why? Because he's a wild and wonderful 4-year-old. The next one up, though, is your 5-year-old, Sunny and Serene. I think a lot of parents notice from 2 to 3, when you get to 4 to 5, when you get to, they've grown out of they have left toddlerhood and entered young childhood. It's a bit of a calm before the storm here. They're starting to enter preschool, pre-K, school. They're trying to learn how to interact with other people now. And so I think a lot of their mind is occupied about their unique place as a person and how they as a person relate to other people beyond the immediate family, their desires. So I like this food and I like this and I like that. So I think they're building up the desires. And then the next year, that's what your six-year-old is. Your six-year-old loving and defiant. Oh, it's funny is once they get past five and six, that's when it's like you can sit down and have little mini conversations with them about deeper subjects. Like I'll talk to my six-year-old about the faith, about what it means to believe in Jesus and why should we do this rather than that and ethical dilemmas and what do they like about this or that. And so there's more of a cognitive ability to engage in that respect at six. And like I said, at five, there's a calm, they're learning who they are as a person. But now at six, they really want to push forward. Okay, I'm not a toddler anymore. I'm not a baby. John Paul, I said, are you a baby? He goes, I'm not a baby. I'm not a baby. Especially by six, they're like, no, I really do want what I want now. I have a legitimate concern. And so that's where it says your six-year-old loving and defiant. And this really does coincide with the idea of the age of responsibility coming up here. Well, let's see. What does it say here for your six-year-old? Let me read the description. The six-year-old is a complex child entirely different from the five-year-old. Though many of the changes are for the good, six is growing more mature, more independent, more daring, and adventurous. This is not necessarily an easy time for the little boy or girl. Relationships with mothers are troubled. Most of the time, six adores mother. But whenever things go wrong, it's her fault. It used to be at five that she was the center, that mother was the center of the child's universe. Now the child is the center of his own universe. I do think that puts it very well there at six. Say, well, no, this is what I want. And there'll be more of like, instead of just tantrum and volleys of screams, the arguments become actual arguments, reasons, discourse. You're unfair. That's not fair. You can't do this. You said you would do that. And abiding by these sort of like holding your parents to a sort of universal principle. It's not just about pleasing. Is that Piaget's? No, Kohlberg's moral development. It's just punishment and reward. Do what parents say because they say. And eventually the child grows the idea. You know, there's principles. Even mom and dad have to be fair, not anything they say goes. They can be held accountable if they're not fair. It's getting the age of responsibility, which gets us then to seven-year-old. Your seven-year-old, and it's not, mostly have been X or Y, terrible or tender, friend or enemy. Your seven-year-old, life in a minor key. I love that. Life in a minor key. Because at seven, what's funny is we talk about age of accountability, age of responsibility. Protestants will oftentimes say that, but the Bible doesn't say anything about age of accountability or age of responsibility. But it is something that's when there's a common age of first communion in the Western Catholic Church, for example. I love saying life in a minor key because I notice my kids when they turn seven, it's really when they start to transition. They want to act like little adults and they want to live out their life like an adult song. But you know, like there's a song and then if you hear a song, but it's played in a minor key, it just sounds off. You recognize it, but it's not the full thing. I think that's what you really see with a seven-year-old, especially with those who have reached age of accountability, be held accountable for their actions in a more serious way, like saying, okay, you have to go to the sacrament of confession. You committed a sin. The odds of being mortal are still pretty low for a seven-year-old. It's still pretty low, but it's still appropriate for you to understand your actions. You have culpability, you have volition, control over what you say and do. And so you can go to confession when you've sinned against God, like when you've been mean to your brother and you knew exactly what you were doing. It wasn't just play that it got out of hand. So the summary of that book says, your seven-year-old is devoted to the delightful but often anxious and withdrawn child of seven. Although any seven-year-old will have moments of exuberance, security, and happiness in general, this is an age of introspection. As it begins, parents and teachers may welcome the quiet after the tussles and tangles of six, loving and defiant. But once the child of seven starts to withdraw, it's almost as though he doesn't know where or when to stop. Seven-year-olds feel picked on by family, friends, and teachers alike. They worry that no one likes them. They expect every little task to prove too difficult to handle. Tears come easily at this age. Now, you might know a seven-year-old is pretty chill, and that's not true of them. But I feel like now seven-year-olds, and then especially when it gets to eight years old, that's what I'm seeing now in the 7, 8, 9 category, is saying, especially the oldest, sorry, Matthew, they want to be the third parent. They want to police their younger brother and sisters. They're the other parent. And what they say should also have a vote, too. It should have half a vote in the household. It also should be taken into account. And that's when you often, parents will say, you're not the other parent, so-and-so. You're not the other parent, Matthew. But that comes, I'm the oldest, and Matthew's the oldest. And I think if you're the oldest, it sort of comes with that territory. I've also noticed with 7, 8, 9 year olds, they get a lot more quiet. They keep things to themselves. Like, you know, when you're 3, 4, 5, if something bothers you, you run to mom and dad and say, here's this thing. They were mean to me. They did this, they did that. But I find 7, 8, 9 year olds, they keep things close to the chest sometimes because they have their own little life. And sometimes they want to keep things inside and make sure it's okay to tell. It's okay to tell other people. Or, you know, they'll have a problem at school with a friend and they're embarrassed about it. So they don't want to tell anybody, but they'll drop hints here or there. But I love that they have a deeply growing introspective interior life, that inner dialogue with themselves, trying to grow and understand who they are as a person and who God made them to be. Rounding it out then, your 8-year-old, lively and outgoing. The 8-year-old child is an exuberant, outgoing bundle of energy. He meets every challenge head on, willing to try almost anything. Sometimes parents are amazed at the enthusiasm and excitement with which their child greets the world. However, 8 is also a time when a child will do a great deal of analyzing and evaluating. So how do you keep up with their relationships regard? And there's a similar thought in 9-year-old. Your 9-year-old, thoughtful and mysterious. So what started with the introspection at 7 gets really deep, I think, at 9. It's not like every age you change dramatically, but I think there's like, you know, 1 to 3 is baby stage. Well, not 1 to, sorry, like newborn to like 18 months is baby. 18 months to 3, 3.5 is toddler. 3.5 to 7 is like little kid. After 7, though, is like bigger kid, mini adult, mini teenager, preteen. Well, we think of preteen 10 to 12, but like pre-preteen. It's pre-preteen to get you ready for 10 through 12 of the preteen stage. And then, oh boy, teenagerism. 9-year-old, what happened to the sunny, outgoing child of 8? Parents of 9-year-olds discover 9 is a tricky age. Children are more distant from mother and father. They're more independent, rely on friends for companionship, or they have a tendency to spend time alone. Some 9s are boisterous and wild. Others are thoughtful and withdrawn. 9-year-olds are hovering on the brink of adolescence. And this, in part, contributes to their up and down nature. So what also is kind of weird is there's some young girls, like ages 9 and 10, they start to hit puberty. Puberty was something that people usually used to didn't hit to like 13, 14, 15. Now we're seeing people, especially even girls, like hitting like 9, 10. It is something else. No puberty in this the Horn household yet. But, oh, boy, I have no advice for anyone on that. That'll be a trial by fire whenever I figure it out. I just love having my little kids around, and they love just having their kid adventures with Legos, and they don't feel too cool for school yet, but we'll see how far that goes. So the book series by Luis Bates Ames, once again, I'm not vouching for anything in the books, but check them out. You might find them interesting. But the titles, Your 1-Year-Old, 2-Year-Old, 3-Year-Old, etc., are one last time. Your 1-Year-Old, Fun, Loving, and Fussy. Your 2-Year-Old, Terrible or Tender. Your 3-Year-Old, Friend or Enemy. 4-Year-Olds are Wild and Wonderful. 5-Year-Olds are Sunny and Serene. 6-Year-Olds are Loving and Defiant. 7-Year-Old is Living a Life in a Minor Key. At 8, it's Lively and Outgoing. And 9, they are Thoughtful and Mysterious. Hope it's helpful for you all and you enjoy that and that you have a very blessed weekend.